I've actually been shattered to realize that after having smoked cannabis for 39 years, it seems that there is no chance of my becoming a reggae singer. Drat. And I was working on my dreadlocks all this time to see. Well, anyway, on to something else. A man who brings his own dreadlocks is up next. I think that the key lesson here is Americans quite often tend to ignore the rest of the world. We do so at our own peril. We need to know two things. I mean, we need to look at the rest of the world in terms of two different aspects of it. What is it we are doing to the rest of the world? Because we are who we are, the hyperpower, and we need to use our power around the world responsibly, and we are not. And it is not simply in Iraq or other places that we are causing problems by our ill-thought-out, ill-conceived, and corruptly pursued policies. The other thing is that other countries are because of various other cultural reasons, their own deep involvement, deep commitment to cannabis prohibition, to the drug war, and that we need to look at what is going on in other countries, learn from their experiences, and sometimes when they occasionally do things right as well. So this is something that, again, that we Americans tend not to look outside of our own country, but we need to. We need to know what's going on in the rest of the world. And I thank you very much, and I thank our speakers, and look forward to a great American. Keith Strong.
And a big hand for Debbie Goldsberry, who chaired the entire day.
Thanks, you guys. It's been an honor to be here. Thank you, Normal, for inviting me. And without further ado, I'd like to bring up Keith Strop, founder of Normal. Made it all happen. Keith, thank you very much. It's been a great conference.
Thank you, dear. What Debbie was really referring to is I'm now America's oldest marijuana smoker. I think that's it. My friend Dick Cowan and a few others of you know that's not true because some of the friends I smoke with are slightly older. But well, first, I would be remiss if I did not begin by thanking Alan and Karen and Paul and Jess and all the other Normal staff who I think have really put together a terrific conference this year. So thanks to all of you. I don't know if any of you are in the room. My notes are all folded wrong, folks. They're going to be awfully hard to read. Also, I want to say what a wonderful gathering we had this year. We've been in business. Now, Normal was formed in late 1970. We were really 35 years old. We did not hold a conference every year, so when we say it's the 35th annual, we're only guessing. We don't quite know some of those middle years what happened. But we know we were on the run. We were not running the show, that's for sure. And the last several years, really, I think since at least 95 in California, what's been important is the people we attract at these that are really doing the work out on the grassroots around the country. It's an enormous group of people, and you give real life to the Normal dream. So thank you very much. We are, at Normal, the Marijuana Smokers Lobby. Now, I know there are a number of terrific organizations that work on legalizing marijuana and legalizing all drugs in this country. And I don't for a moment wish to dismiss any of them or suggest that they don't have an important role to play. But rather, I want to focus on why we started Normal off as we did and why we are, in fact, the Marijuana Smokers Lobby. For one thing, I believe we're the only organization that actually says, although I may have to rethink this because I believe I heard Ethan Nadelman say some very positive things about marijuana yesterday morning, things that I don't think I would have heard him say several years ago. He said not only is it not bad, but that it is good. Well, that's my point. For 35 years, Normal has been saying at the top of our lungs in every way we know how, there is absolutely nothing wrong with responsible use of marijuana. Get over it. Get out of our lives. There's nothing wrong with smoking pot. Secondly, I think Normal may be the only group that speaks in the first person. those of us who smoke marijuana. Now, I understand there are reasons, and sometimes you need to talk in the third person. If you spoke in the first person and were self-identified as a marijuana smoker, you might pay some unhealthy prices, and I don't really want you to do that. On the other hand, I think it is terribly important politically that there is someone out there who talks in terms of those tens of millions of us who smoke marijuana. Remember, according to the different surveys, there's one private survey that shows 47% of the entire adult population in this country have smoked marijuana at some point in their lives. They may not be a smoker now, but they know for damn sure it didn't make them go out and commit reefer madness. So that's one half of the population. Think about that. Even the government data, by the way, shows it's 40%. And you know a lot of people are lying to the government surveys. And I suspect some of them are not being honest on the 47. So we either have a majority of living Americans today or are very close to having a majority. More people living in America will have smoked marijuana than will not have smoked marijuana. And folks, that's close to a tipping point, and we are going to win this damn thing and win it soon. I think you probably all know this, but in essence, the simplicity we tried to approach to what our program would be 35 years ago hasn't really changed much. There's two prongs to it. One, it says the elimination of all penalties for the personal possession and use of marijuana, and it doesn't matter whether it's for medical use, religious use, personal use. It just doesn't matter. There's no penalty, or there should be no penalty, for the personal use of marijuana. That should include the right to grow your own marijuana. And number two, eventually, we need a legally regulated and controlled market where we can buy our marijuana. It's risky on the black market. You sometimes run physical risks of getting hurt, getting shot. You always run the risk of losing your money or getting busted or something else. Well, so the basic message of Normal is stop arresting smokers and give us a legal market or let us grow our own. Now, for those of us who, where was I going here? I guess the way we get there, let me talk about that a little bit. I really think the single biggest step we can take to get from where we are to where we want to be, and we've made enormous progress. I'm going to talk for a minute about public attitudes. And in fact, I think we've largely won the hearts and minds of most of the American people. We haven't figured out how to go that next step and get that political support that should come with it. But let's talk for a minute about why we've gotten where we've gotten. We've gotten because a number of marijuana smokers, consumers, have been willing to come out of the closet, to get up, to stand up, to light up, and let America know how we feel. To the extent we continue to remain in the closet and smoke surreptitiously, I'm not sure we can ever get the political goals we want. It's not that I think we need to blow smoke in the public's face, but there are some solid reasons why, until we come out of the closet, we can't win our rights. Now, by the way, having said that, let me also quickly recognize that I know not everybody who smokes can come out of the closet, because for some people, you'd lose your job tomorrow. You couldn't support your family. You might have fractures in the family relationship. So that's a difficult decision that has to be made with a lot of discretion. But I do think we need to, as a culture and as a group, understand that until we have the courage to come out of the closet and to say there's absolutely nothing wrong with smoking marijuana, we are not going to win our freedom entirely. Now, so starting with myself, I first smoked pot 40 years ago when I was a freshman at Georgetown Law School in 1965. I've been a regular pot smoker ever since then. And as our friend and colleague Mickey Norris likes to say, I smoke pot and I like it a lot. Marijuana obviously improves the taste of food. It improves our appreciation of sex. There are lots of good things that grass does and that we all hear about and read about and experience, and I think that's terrific. But frankly, I think it does even more than that. For many of us, it allows us to stand back and get a second perspective on our life and on our complex careers and on the problems we're having with our neighbors or our loved one or whatever. It causes me in my life to have a lot better relationship with the rest of the world than I did before I smoked marijuana. Now, I know... I know that's challenging to say out loud, because it's not too long ago that if you said that out loud, you were so marginalized that you'd never have a Main Street job in America. I'm both too old and I'm not qualified for a Main Street job. So I can be honest. So I guess my summary in this about smoking is that marijuana smoking in the right setting can be a very helpful and even enriching experience. And we simply have to develop the courage to say that and to say it over and over so we overcome some of the negative baggage that we carry after 75 years of prohibition and the exaggeration. Most marijuana smokers, as you and I know, are just average Americans. They work hard. They raise kids. They contribute in a positive way to their community. Their marijuana smoking doesn't define their entire life, and it doesn't even define their politics. There are many of our opponents who oppose us because of a cultural war. They formed their opinions back in the late 60s, early 70s, the Vietnam War. They think that when they think of a marijuana smoker, it's a long-haired hippie. He's burning his draft card and smoking a joint and protesting the war in Vietnam. Now, that wasn't totally accurate even back then, although there was some of that. Dick, I remember a few. There's no doubt that at least there was a lot of marijuana smoked at the anti-war demonstration. So naturally, those people who supported the war in Vietnam thought they hated marijuana. But it was never accurate then, and it sure as hell is not accurate now. We do not display or describe our political preferences by whether or not we smoke marijuana, and we need to get that point out. There are large numbers of conservatives and traditional Americans and mainstream Americans and people. They're not all lefties by any means. Some of them are righties, but they like to smoke marijuana. So if we can overcome this negative stereotype that we're all Jane Fonda, you know, basically just waiting to make our move in Ramsey Clark. I happen to admire Jane Fonda and Ramsey Clark both a great deal. But they represent the far left of the political spectrum, and we can't win this issue with just the far left. So just in my mind, the comparison that's always inevitable is as gays and lesbians did not in large numbers win their rights until large numbers of gay and lesbian Americans were willing to come out of the closet and take whatever heat that meant, whether they lost their job or had no relationship with their family or weren't respected by their neighbors or had to put up with hostility from homophobes. Until they did that, they didn't win their freedom largely. And I know there's still more to go in this country, and I know the gay and lesbian community will be the first to say that. But my goodness, when we started Normal 35 years ago, I think this issue and the gay issue were almost at the same place. We were both disliked. They thought we were radical. Maybe we were unsent of the gains they needed to make to win their freedom. And we're on about 15% or something. And that's when we occasionally get to visit San Francisco or Vancouver. Otherwise, we're lower than that. And so I think it's because we couldn't convince our constituents to be single-issue constituents to the degree that the gays and lesbians have. And we weren't willing to tighten up and vote only for people who want to give us our freedom, which is my next point. As long as we stay in the closet, the other thing is we first reinforce the idea there's something wrong with smoking. Otherwise, why do you have to stay in a closet? You know, it's sort of a self-effectuating myth. You're in the closet because there's something wrong. No, we're in the closet because if we came out of the closet, we'd lose our job or we'd lose our student loans. God only knows our parents wouldn't speak to us or whatever. So on one hand, by remaining in the closet, we give credibility to the concept there's something wrong with smoking. But more importantly, we can never gain the political clout to which our numbers entitle us. Remember now, 47% of the adult population have smoked grass. 6 million in the last year. 15 million are considered regular smokers. That means at least in the last 30 days. Folks, we have some political clout, but they have to see us. We are invisible when we are in the closet, largely invisible. Yeah, they know there are few people smoke marijuana in their district, but I hear from elected members, and I know some of you do too, they're kind of sympathetic up close, but they don't think anybody in their district smokes marijuana. Well, Christ, people smoke marijuana in every district in America, but we've learned to do it surreptitiously. So we have to figure out a way to get enough of us out of the closet and the rest of us can articulate the position so that our elected officials understand that the marijuana culture is a culture that's serious, we're here to stay, we're big numbers, and we can even swing elections in some cases. Now, let me raise an issue that's sort of California-specific, but I think it's something we can all learn from. Excuse me. I'm nervous, and this gives me a moment. In California, the model, Ethan, again, at his speech, I thought, talked in a nice way about the model that you Californians have given us about the distribution of marijuana without maybe even realizing what you were doing. You know, it's a gray market. The Prop 215 didn't exactly say you could have buyers clubs, right? But somehow they grew up and they sprung up and you all fought and some got taken down. But somehow we have a model of distribution here where they have choices. They have different prices. It's like a retail store. It's like America in every other damn thing but marijuana. And the sky didn't fall. So on one hand, what you have demonstrated is, even though technically it's for patients, it's in a state where the definition of a patient is reasonably broad. Is that a fair statement? Anything our good friends are willing to say, I think, is what it means. And so, and we're delighted with that. But what it seems to me to say is that argument that somehow we're going to hell in a handbasket if we legalize marijuana for general purposes doesn't make sense, because we've almost legalized it for general purposes out here, and it doesn't seem to be bothering anybody at all. Your usage rates are no higher than states next door where they don't allow it. They're sometimes lower than states back east where it's still a crime. So on one hand, I have great respect for that model and what you've taught us. And it took great courage, of course, because it wasn't clearly spelled out that those rights are in Prop 215. And there were people who took bad falls. Some of them were here this weekend and spent time out of the country or time in prison or whatever because they were a little ahead of the curve. But it seems to me that it is terribly important that those of us who are healthy and who smoke marijuana because we enjoy it, or we enjoy the detachment it gives us, the way it allows us to look at the world, I think it's important we not try to sneak in under the guise of medical use. Now, saying that, I'm not saying if I lived in California, I absolutely wouldn't get a doctor's recommendation, because, frankly, it looks like a get-out-of-jail card, or maybe even better than that, maybe a never-get-arrested card. And those are pretty valuable. And just maybe all of us should have one if you live in California. But at the same time, as we advocate the issue, I think it's terribly important we separate the two, and that we not try to have everybody who's a little depressed or everybody who had a bad day qualify along with MS patients and AIDS patients and seriously ill patients who would literally die without this medication. First, I think it weakens the medical use argument. It makes it look less legitimate. We know what our opponents do. They always grab some healthy-looking patient in the footage if they have a choice and say, look what the medical marijuana my eye. He's not in a wheelchair. You know, there are some diseases you don't have to be in a wheelchair, but they forgot that. So it's it undermines that. It also may be a box canyon. Lester Grinspoon has been warning us for years about the pharmaceuticalization, he calls it, of marijuana. What he picked up long before most of us acknowledged that he was right is that so long as a drug company can patent it and make a profit off of it, our opponents don't really have any trouble with allowing the ingredients for marijuana to be sold legally for patients to have pain reduction if they can get it from the ingredients, from the cannabinoids, the THC, the terpenes, whatever parts of the marijuana plant they're getting it. They don't have any problem so long as you don't smoke it and so long as some drug company can patent it and make a profit. Thus, you got Marinol approved in record time all the way down to Schedule 3 now. It's almost over the counter, for Christ's sake. They never went through any tough tests. Now we have side effects, which I know some people in our movement are both invested in or involved in. Look, I think it helps a lot of people. It's wonderful. It's more organic than Marinol. It's at least whole THC instead of synthetic, and at least has its two other ingredients that I think makes it probably more well-rounded. But the fact is, that's exactly what Lester Grinspoon warned us about. What do you think is going to happen to all the people in California, for example, if this should happen, but in other states it will happen, where they say, okay, medical marijuana is no problem, but you can't smoke it. Here's your three choices of drugs. You're going to have hundreds of thousands of people who are really recreational users primarily who are going to be back on the black market because they don't want to take a damn Marinol patch every time they were otherwise smoke a joint. So we got to watch out. I think there's a box canyon if we're not careful to separate those two issues. To separate them, by the way, all I'm really saying is that they taught us in law school about offenses which are bad in and of themselves. They were immoral. I think the Latin expression they taught us early was malum in se. And then those offenses which are malum prohibitum. They're bad because we say they're bad. And all crime fits in one of those two categories. If it's in the malum and se, the immoral kind, it involves moral turpitude. Murder, rape, robbery, those have always been crimes, even where there were no specific statutes. They were crimes under the common law because they were immoral. Marijuana smoking is in a category like speeding, like spitting on the sidewalk, like smoking marijuana. There may be valid reasons why you want to limit where that can be done or how often or whatever, but there's no morality. There is nothing to be ashamed of because it's not immoral. And so as we incorporate that concept better, I think we will get better at justifying coming out of the closet, overcoming those negative stereotypes they build up for 75 years, and letting more Americans know that most marijuana smokers are just good Americans who work hard and contribute to their communities. Where am I here? We'll find out. Let me talk a little further. Well, for who smokes marijuana today? I mean, I think we covered most of this. You've got roughly one out of two Americans who've smoked. And that's according to the private surveys. You got 40% who smoked according to the federal government. 26 million the last year, 15 million regular smokers. This is an interesting point. Think about it, the people that are so frightened the sky is going to fall. You know, the overwhelming majority of those people did not even go on to become regular marijuana smokers. Not only do they have no problems, they just experimented with it a few times. It didn't settle them. They were comfortable doing something else. I think that's perfectly fine. The vast majority of the tens of millions of Americans who smoke marijuana are otherwise law-abiding citizens. That's a crucial point to consider. If the fact was that smoking marijuana is associated with some really antisocial behavior, if somehow most marijuana smokers also broke and entered or something to fill their spare time, then we'd know there's some problem there. That's not. It's the only law most marijuana smokers ever break. It's the marijuana law. It's also important to realize no one's going to end marijuana prohibition for us because we have the most at risk. We also have the opportunity to fix it with those numbers. If we become better disciplined, if we accept the basic pledge that I will never again vote for a politician who wants to treat me as a criminal. Now, that's a hard pledge to take because it means what we all have done for most of our lives. We've had national and state candidates, sometimes local candidates who actually support stuff we like, but on state and federal, usually, we may like some of the stuff they support, but when they get to drug policy, come on, we're holding our nose, man. We're voting for them because at least they're pro-abortion or at least they care about human rights or there's some other reason. But it's not because they're honest on our issue in most cases. There are clearly are exceptions. We have the political clout that if we took that pledge within two election cycles, every candidate running for office would be supporting our position because they would have seen the candidates who got thrown out of office because they didn't have the courage to support our rights. But that requires us to be disciplined. Never again vote for a candidate for public office that wants to treat you like a criminal. Quickly, I want to mention this only because it's in California. And I remember a couple of years ago, especially, the drug czar went into a big deal about trying to demonize marijuana smokers. They're always trying to demonize us one way or another. But this one I thought was particularly crude and rude because they claimed that we were responsible for terrorism. You remember that one? If you buy marijuana, you're supporting terrorists. Well, you know, there's a couple of things I think the drug czar missed on this one. One is most marijuana smoked in the U.S. today is grown in the U.S. today. Does this man not know we have developed a grow marijuana market second to none in the world? We have fine first-grade marijuana grown in every state in the country. Thank God. I mean, I don't want to get too close to home, but I'll be honest with you. I know who I buy my marijuana from, and there are a couple of young entrepreneurs. Some of them might even live in a Northern California county, and I don't think they have the slightest damn interest in terrorism. You know, when I've sent that money to them, I'm quite comfortable. They're using it to support their families and probably plant another crop. Now, of the countries that do import a little marijuana to America, or we import some, it's almost all Jamaica, Canada, and Mexico. Well, I haven't seen any of those three countries on the list of terrorist-supporting countries we're supposed to watch out for. And by the way, the famous Jamaican terrorists, yeah. They scare me all the time. If the end consumer of a product that somehow in the economic chain benefits terrorists is going to be held responsible, then I tell you, any of you driving SUVs better be putting those babies aside. What do you think that oil money does? I don't hear anybody claiming they're supporting terrorists. So at any event, a low-life argument, and one that we shouldn't be hearing at this time, but that's the quality of leadership we have at the White House. Now for the good news real quick, and again, I realize most of you know this issue as well as I do, but it is helpful to remind ourselves sometimes that we've come a long way. As I say, in many ways, I think we've done the heavy lifting. When we started 35 years ago, I don't know the exact percentage. It's been too long since I've seen them, but I think roughly 30 to 35% of the public agreed with us that you should not treat a marijuana smoker like a criminal. That meant about 2 out of 3 Americans said, no, actually, we're perfectly happy treating you guys like criminals. That has so changed, which means, well, on the medical use issue, it's 75 to 80% in any state you want to go. You go to Alabama, it's 75%. I think some of the northern states has been as high as 80% of the public say, of course, if a doctor says marijuana will help a seriously ill patient, they should be allowed to use it. 80%. That may not be too surprising because that's an easier issue. How about recreational smokers, the rest of us? The best poll in this was CNN and Time Magazine. It's about 2 years old now, I think. And they asked the question of, what penalty do you prefer for just recreational marijuana smokers? And the choice, you know, was jail and a lot of jail and fine only and no penalty. Well, there were 4% that actually wanted no penalty, which was pretty good, and 72% said a fine only. That means in total, 3 out of 4 Americans are now on record as saying the essence of what normal has been about for 35 years. We've been saying marijuana smokers are not criminals. And that's what 3 out of 4 Americans agree with. So, folks, you should be proud. We should all be proud. We made enormous headway in changing people's hearts and minds. That's the good news. The bad news is, how the hell do we convert that into public policy? We seem to have been stymied. I mean, one would think politicians would read the same surveys we read, and they do because we make them available, but they always run scared. And nobody ever has an example of where a politician was defeated because he was too strong on crime and drugs. But they have a lot of examples where somebody was defeated because they were too soft on crime and drugs. And so our problem, our challenge has been to convert public policy, our public opinion that we've already built up into public policy. And again, I think the only way we're going to get there is when they hear from more and more average Americans who smoke marijuana from their district that say, look, if you want me to continue supporting you, you got to know how important this issue is to me. You don't really have to say you're a smoker. You don't. You know, you can come close to that and get by with it, I think. All right. I need to wrap this up so we can go home. You folks have been a terribly patient group this week, and we appreciate that. I want to mention real quickly something Alan St. Pierre mentioned at the opening, his opening comments, but I think it is important. One of the most exciting things to come down the pike in the last year, from my perspective, has been this SAFER initiative, because it's one where it's so simple, we almost overlooked it. We used to argue the issue of marijuana is less dangerous than alcohol, but we also argued we're spending too much money on jail. We also argued that it's unfair to arrest men. There were a lot of arguments. And somehow, sometimes in that mix of arguments, you don't quite catch somehow. What this initiative seems to have done so far, the one that won in Denver is now going statewide, and 3 college campuses along with SSDP chapters and normal chapters have now passed an equalization ordinance or a recommendation on their campus. These are wonderful opportunities to debate the entire issue of legalizing marijuana and fairness and how it compares with alcohol, and they cost almost no money. And in addition, they give us a chance, those of us that work with different organizations, to reach out and work together for a change. Far too often we're fighting for resources, we're competing for credit, for resources, and that's understandable, but it sometimes precludes us from working cooperatively on projects where we share a common interest. And I think the SAFER cooperation that Normal's been doing, and I trust other groups are going to start, I know SSDP has, other groups will start doing, if there's at least a college chapter out there of Normal any place in America in the next year and they don't do a SAFER initiative, I think they're missing an opportunity. And I think a lot of the state chapters too. So let me just quickly recommend that I think that's terribly important if we can do it. Once we work together on projects, we kind of forget the stuff that we are fighting over, and we appreciate what we share in common, and we become a movement, you know, instead of competing for resources, which seems sometimes too frequent. All right, what does all this mean? Well, in my mind, it means at least that we are gradually but steadily winning this fight. And sometime in the next few years, I used to say in my lifetime, I'm frankly not as positive about that fact right now, but within your lifetime, we are going to win this battle. And we're going to legalize marijuana. We're going to stop arresting smokers. And so that's a fait accompli. We just have to figure out how to work it out. They're not going to go back and change our minds. So they're never going to get three quarters of America that says, let's treat marijuana like marijuana smokers like criminals again. So that we've done. Secondly, I think we're going to have a period of embarrassment and shame that's going to be fairly significant when we think about the damage that we've set by as a culture and allowed to happen for 75 years. Think about the numbers of people who've lost jobs or lives or custody of children, spent decades in prison for a nonviolent plant that grows naturally. So I think there will be some recrimination of sorts. I'm not sure how that'll take, whether there will be a report. I hope there is at some point, some congressional report or something that acknowledges, boy, we made a wrong turn there and hurt an awful lot of people. Let's at least fess up to that. The U.S. Supreme Court, in a recent Texas sodomy case of all things called Lawrence v. Texas, they defined it two things. One is privacy provisions of the First Amendment, and the other, the liberty interest protected by the Constitution. And I want to close by quoting you a couple lines and telling you how I think they apply to us. Justice Anthony Kennedy, writing for the majority, said the following, quote, "At the heart of liberty is the right to define one's own concept of existence, of meaning, of the universe, of the mystery of human life. It is a promise of the Constitution that there is a realm of personal liberty which government may not enter." Now, as I said when I began, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. It should be of no interest or concern to the government. But we are only incidentally talking about marijuana. We're really talking about that personal freedom, that realm of personal liberty where government may not enter, according to the justice. With the continued support of good people like you all across this country, we're committed to returning a measure of personal freedom to tens of millions of responsible marijuana smokers over the next few years. Thank you very much for coming.